Adventures in Research.
What kind of lights are those?
Fluorescent lights, my boy. Fluorescent. You'll have them in your home someday.
Nah, never happen. They're okay for carnivals or advertising, maybe, but who'd want them at home?
This is Paul Shannon introducing another transcribed tale of science as told by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And here is Dr. Thomas.
Thank you, Paul, and hello, everyone. This is the story of a stone that gave light. Literally and figuratively, a glowing account of fluorescent illumination and how it came to be. Here is an adventure in research that began over 300 years ago and came to light publicly at the close of the last decade. Our story's beginning takes us back to the year 1602 in the city of Bologna, Italy. There, plying his trade as a cobbler, lives a man named Vincenzo Cascariolo. But Vincenzo has less interest in his leather and shoes than he has in his hobby, for he is one of the earliest men of research, an alchemist.
Ah, Anthony, my friend, how wonderful the air is here on the Mount Pesaro. How fresh and clean. Ah, truly, I'm glad we have made this expedition.
In that, I can't agree, Vincenzo. You may enjoy this mountain climbing, but it isn't to my liking.
No, Anthony. This is a necessary part of the alchemist's work. The search for the stone that will make gold. Here on the lonely mountain, nature hides her secrets. They wait only for those of us who are wise to find them.
Nature can keep her secrets. Oh, let us rest for a while.
Oh, very well. Here is a shaded spot where we can sit down.
This feels good.
Oh, a little rest is important, to be sure. Even I must, but... Anthony, look. Over there.
What? Where?
There, in that patch of sunlight. That rock, see? Gleaming and sparkling like the very...
Why? A moment ago, it wasn't there.
It was. But we didn't see it until the sun fell upon it.
Is it gold?
That I doubt. But there can be little question. It is the gold stone we've been searching for. Come quickly, we must have it.
Wait. Till I get up from here.
Oh, hurry. Oh, look. Look at it gleam. Is it not beautiful?
Can we pry it loose?
Oh, of course, yes. Here, Anthony, it is not very deep. Come over here beside me, and we will both push on the rock together.
Very well.
Now.
Oh, it doesn't budge an inch.
Once more, together now. There. It is ours.
But it is so big. How can we take it?
Oh, never mind. I'll carry it.
Be careful.
There. I have it. Now I can cradle it in my arms and carry it easily. Come back to the shop we go, to turn the sparkling rock to gold.
Back to his shop in Bologna goes Vincenzo Cascariolo, bearing the heavy burden of a glistening stone, filled with excitement in anticipation of the experiment to come. Now Vincenzo is no longer the cobbler. Now he is the alchemist, confidently breaking off small chunks of the magic stone, adding powders and mixtures that aid the alchemist's tools of the time. Into his furnace the mixture goes. Now the heat. Fire to break down the elements, the only force the alchemist knows. Fire to fuse them, to cause the magic stone to turn them into the most prized of all metals, gold. And then, when the alchemist feels the process is complete, he quenches the flames, lets the glowing matter cool, hauls it from the furnace, and finds...
We have failed, Anthony. Something is wrong. There is no gold at all.
No, there is not gold. And there will never be any. For the magic of that glistening stone is not meant to give gold to the world, but light. And Vincenzo Cascariolo ends his days without ever knowing the true glory of his lucky find. Vincenzo's fortune is not without some compensation. It gives the cobbler alchemist a place in scientific history. News of a strange stone travels fast. Other men in far-flung lands hear of the Bologna stone and methodically seek out other rocks like it. And as the years roll by, their curiosity is continually piqued by the peculiar stones and rocks they find, giving off a mysterious glow in the light of the sun. Some glow with a green hue, others blue, still others orange and red, and sometimes in combinations of colors. But take them out of the sunlight, and they cease to glow at all.
Why do these rocks give out that peculiar light?
Why do some rocks glow brighter than others?
Why are the colors different?
What does it? What accounts for it?
What do you call it?
For well over 200 years, men wonder about it, notice the effect in an ever-increasing number of materials. And finally, in the early 1850s, the answer comes from the laboratory of the eminent English physicist, Sir G.G. Stokes.
We've seen the way quinine sulfate reacts to the rays of the sun. It flashes a brilliant blue. It is quinine sulfate in solution that I have in this test tube. I have a very strong suspicion that it's only one part of the sun's rays that causes this reaction. By breaking the sunlight up into the spectrum with this crystal of quartz lying here on the table, and allowing the spectrum to fall one wavelength at a time upon the quinine sulfate in the tube, we should be able to ascertain which part of the spectrum causes the quinine sulfate to glow. Would you be kind enough to raise the window curtain so we get a beam of light in here? Thank you.
The assistant opens the curtain. Stokes holds the quartz crystal in the beam of light, and all the colors of the rainbow are showered on the table. Then he brings the test tube with a solution of quinine sulfate into the spectrum's light. The red band falls upon the tube. There's no reaction. Now up to orange he moves. Then yellow. Then green. Now the violet light at the very top of the spectrum hits the tube. Nothing has happened. He moves the vial just a shade beyond the violet band into what seems to be only darkness. And
there it is. That blue flash of light on the tube. I was right. The invisible ultraviolet at the top of the spectrum is what causes the material to give off the light that we can see. There is the answer.
Yes, there is the answer. Stokes' law, explaining the tendency of certain materials to glow under ultraviolet light, is entered as another scientific truth. And he calls the action fluorescence.
I am extremely doubtful that it has any practical value except as a subject for research and laboratory experiments.
Now comes electricity, and with it the incandescent lamp. Light for homes and factories at the flick of a switch.
Carbon filament and the bulb business are good. The light's too dim. It takes too many bulbs to make the place bright enough.
There's a new filament coming out. It's called tungsten. Makes the lamps a lot brighter, they say.
Say, look at this, would you? They're making light bulbs smaller now, and the cost is going down.
Gosh, those lights heat the place up. Can't you turn a couple of them off?
Yes, electric lighting is here to stay. And in the laboratories, engineers doing research on electric bulbs are constantly on the lookout. Then it comes. Someone, somewhere, we don't know who or where, makes a suggestion.
We can now produce ultraviolet rays by electricity. We do it using mercury vapor in a vacuum tube. Stokes' law tells us certain materials are fluorescent. That is, they give off light when ultraviolet rays strike them. So, why not put the fluorescent material right in the vacuum tube with the ultraviolet rays? And maybe have a new source of electric light without a filament.
Just an idea, but why not? Like Vincenzo Cascariolo had done so many years before, modern men of research go out in search of fluorescent rocks, bring them back to their laboratories and grind them up. Not to make gold, but this time to make light. Now they see a practical use for fluorescence, put their talents to the problems in earnest. And the problems are many. To get the proper material, to put it satisfactorily inside the mercury vapor tube, to make it fluoresce at all. Are they successful? Well, come to the New York World's Fair of 1939 and see for yourself.
Look at those lights, will you? Look at those lights.
Hey, they're beautiful. Gosh, I've never seen anything like them. What wonderful colors.
They're all around, everywhere you look. What kind are they?
Sure, I don't know.
Rods of light. Rods of light. That's what they are. And every color of the rainbow, too.
Made them special for the fair, did they?
Yep, newest thing out. Fluorescent lights, they're called. You'll have them in your home someday.
Nah, that'll never happen. They're okay for advertising and lighting up carnivals, maybe. But who'd want them at home?
The public sees them and is amazed. They'd have been more amazed to know that every one of those rods of fluorescent light came out of a research laboratory and not from a factory. Only the research men knew how to make them.
For a green light, the basic coating of the tube is zinc silicate.
Add beryllium to zinc silicate to make the light more yellow and orange.
Want a blue color? Use compounds of tungsten.
Cadmium and silicon coating will give you a red light.
Mix them all together properly, and you'll get a light that is white.
And that's the fluorescent lamp you use today. A lamp that's brighter, cooler, easy on the eyes. A lamp combining the elements of the sun's black light and Cascariolo's Bologna stone in one single magic wand. Now truly we can say that his is the stone that gave light.
There's more to the story of the Bologna stone than meets the eye in fluorescent lamps. I could tell you how paints made of fluorescent materials are used in signs that glow in the dark under invisible ultraviolet light. I could tell you how invisible numbers are made with fluorescent ink on laundry and dry cleaning, so the clothes may be properly sorted and still show no mark under ordinary light. I could tell you how prospectors, searching for valuable tungsten, hunt it down at night with portable ultraviolet lamps, using the black light to make the tungsten fluoresce a greenish blue and give away its hiding place. There just isn't time to tell the whole story, but when you add up all the useful things fluorescence does, you may be sure the Bologna stone that started it has made more gold than Vincenzo Cascariola ever dreamed of through all his ancient adventures in research.
You have heard the story of the stone that gave light, as told by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Tune in again next week for another transcribed adventure in research.